Vodka O'Clock.
Hey everyone, it's Amber Love from Vodka O'Clock Podcast and AmberUnmasked.com. Don't forget we are labeled as an explicit website and podcast, and we are, of course, available on iTunes and Stitcher and at the website AmberUnmasked.com, so be sure to always leave some feedback. That'd be swell. Joining me today is my first time welcoming Fabian Rangel Jr. to Vodka O'Clock. Welcome to the show. Did I get it right?
Cool. Yeah, you did a really good job. In fact, you sound very professional right now. Everything you're saying, I'm just like...
Cool. We ran into each other for like 2 minutes at New York Comic Con, and I think that was pretty much like the only time I saw you.
That's the most anybody ever sees me. I'm like Bigfoot.
So that's good. So that's why you write about, paranormal, because you're one of them.
Yeah, I don't actually exist.
I was there at the 215 Inc. booth hanging out with everybody, those Perkins brothers, and you stopped by and signed a book for me, which was great.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so, that was a lot of fun.
That was a crazy show. Are you going back this year?
No, I usually, like the whole time I've been doing the comic book thing, I can only really make it to one out of state con a year.
Uh-huh.
And, that year it was New York, and, this year I did a Heroes Con.
Oh, cool. That's what I'm doing is moving around more. So.
But next year I'm going to be doing a lot more out of state cons. I'm looking at maybe like 4 next year, so. And I've already got like 2 set up, so.
That's cool. That's very cool. Where are you based out of?
Corpus Christi, Texas. It's like about 3 hours south of Austin.
Oh, all right. So you're certainly not even remotely close to here in the East Coast.
Oh yeah, no. Where are you at?
I'm in New Jersey.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Do you
listen to like the Gaslight Anthem? Do you know who they are?
No, I have no idea.
Really?
I'm kind of like out of touch.
Oh, okay. that's one of the bands I think of when I think of New Jersey. I guess I should have said like, I don't know, like Bruce Springsteen or something.
Yeah, I'm pretty much not into like a lot of the homegrown Jersey music, like Springsteen and Bon Jovi and stuff like that. I never really got into any of them.
Oh, okay.
But some Motown like type stuff came out of here, you know, and that stuff,
really?
The oldies stuff, I kind of dig. That,
yeah, no, that's cool.
But no, it's so funny when people talk about music nowadays. I'm just like, I don't know who that is. You're just pulling words out of the dictionary. I don't. You're making it up. You could flip to the dictionary, do 3 random pages, pick 3 words, put them together, and have a rock band name.
Yeah.
And it exists.
Yeah, there was a band that I used to like a lot called Small Brown Bike, and I would tell people about that band, and they'd be like, you're just making that shit up.
Yeah, totally. Like, let's see, like Stone Temple Pilots, Third Eye Blind, what was Sisters of the... something age by
Sisters of a Down.
So maybe something like that. I don't know. And I'm just like, what are you people talking about? I'm like,
yeah, music kind of was like control or like ruled my life pretty much like from when I was like 15 all the way to about 29. Like all through my 20s, I like played in bands and went on tour, and just, like, music was, like, everything. But, comics kind of took over about 4 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, music was really important to me in college because I was DJing at the college station and stuff, but it wasn't, like, anything that I wasn't that passionate about it. I just, because I was on the air, I got to know some of the music, but I was more interested in talk radio. And had to figure out how to do that and how to get into that. And nobody likes to hear talk radio on a college station. And so now there's podcasting.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're just like ahead of the curve.
That's absolutely right. I'm going to take full credit. I mean, we were on reel to reels and stuff back then. We were, you know, this was a long time ago. So the idea that any young people like talk, any kind of talk radio was bizarre. It was always, you know, it was always like local politics or something, and I didn't care about that. I wanted to talk to people. I wanted to talk about entertainment.
Yeah. The stuff that matters.
the stuff I care about. So that's why you're here today. You know, it was really awesome that you gave me a heads up that you had the new series out. And I was like, oh, okay, you know. Sometimes I'm like, I don't even know what to expect. I've never heard anything about this book. What do I do? And I looked at it, and I looked at Ryan Cody is the artist on it, and I'm just like, this is magnificent. So what we're going to be talking about mostly today is Doc Unknown. We'll talk about whatever you want. If you've got other projects you want to talk about, give a shout out.
I want to talk about Coming to America with Eddie Murphy.
That was a good one. Let's go to Queens.
No, I just I'm just looking at my desk right now, and I have that movie right here. I made this list of like all my like really like favorite movies. And I had like a comedy section. I get bored at work and I just make lists. And, so I made this list of like my favorite comedies, and I didn't own Coming to America. Like I owned like all the other movies, but Coming to America was on that list. And I was like, well, I don't even own that movie. So I went and like ordered a bunch of movies on like eBay the other day just so I could have like all the movies that are on my favorite movies list.
That's cool. So yeah, some of my favorite movies are, they're played so often now on cable, and even though it'll be like, you know, with commercials and everything, I don't care, that I'm not so worried if I don't have the DVDs. But it's cool. And I'm, you know, once in a while I'll actually watch a movie on Netflix, but I usually use Netflix for TV shows.
Us too.
Yeah, so I'm always like behind what everybody else is watching because I like to marathon those things.
You're like, shut up.
Yeah. But Doc Unknown is very pulpy and vintage feeling, and it's so fun because it's the four issues that are out. Each issue has a story, but throughout it is a bigger arc. You know, and it's very, you know, very mysterious and some supernatural stuff. And like, there's a lot of things that I could, you know, that are modern that we could talk about that it feels like, you know, like Night at the Museum was like what your first issue was like, and everything had its own little premise to it. And it did remind me of like such cool old stuff, like the Green Hornet and, even some, like some of the really good Batman from the animated series.
Yeah.
Some of those stories with like Killer Croc and everything, how they were so pulpy. You know, so, you know, what was, where did the origin for you start with Doc Unknown?
Well, pretty much like I had mentioned earlier, I usually only do one out of state con a year. You know, that's because most of my, like, extra money goes to making comics. And so, you know, I've been making comics for about 3 years now, and, I've been spending a lot of money.
Yeah,
and so, around this time last year, I was like, you know, I really want to try and do more out of state cons in 2014. I like plan out everything like pretty, far in advance. And so I was like, I'll just kind of like take a break from making new comics and do more out of state conventions, like at least try and do like three or four, in 2014. And so I'll kind of use the money that I usually use for making new comics on like plane tickets and, you know, hotel and stuff and, getting the tables and everything. And so, but I was like, you know, that's still not for like a whole other year. I was like, I could make like one more like miniseries of something new. And so I was like, okay, if I'm going to like, and then after like 2014, I was like, well, if I do all these out of state cons and I'm still not really, if I'm still on like the same level that I am now, I'll probably just go ahead and, you know, stop. with the whole comic book thing, and so I was like, if I was gonna make like one more comic and have that be like the last comic book that I ever made, what kind of book would I like kick myself for not doing, you know? Like, if it was like 2 years from now and I was like, oh, well, like, at least I made this book, you know? And so I try to think of like my favorite things, like my favorite comics are like, you know, like the whole Mignolaverse books, like Hellboy and BPRD. And my favorite series of all time is Planetary. And so, and then I've been rewatching a lot of Batman the Animated Series at the time, and I was just like, I want to do a book.
Yeah, like, just like that.
Yeah, it's just like Planetary, Hellboy and BPRD and Batman the Animated Series kind of like felt like my version of all that stuff. And so that's where Duck Unknown came from. I'd kind of been looking at Ryan Cody's art. We had done like a short 5-page story together, and it was kind of, you know, similar in tone to Duck Unknown. And so I was like, I'm going to do a whole book like that. And, you know, I just stared at like Ryan Cody's DeviantArt gallery for like an hour one day, and I was just like, you know, letting his art, you know, inspire me or whatever. And I was like, I'm going to make a book that's going to be like the funnest comic this guy has ever drawn. Like, I'm just going to give him so many fun things to draw. And I really did write. Right. I wrote Duck Unknown for Ryan, like for his art.
Aw, such a beautiful team story. Love it. His art is spectacular. Really, it's, you know, it's great.
Yeah, and he's like, man, he's been killing it, like, on this whole thing, like, just getting these pages, you know, him turning in these pages has just been, like, fun. It's just been so much fun. Like, every aspect of Duck Unknown is just, like, so fun. Had, like the most fun I've ever had making comics.
Well, in the story, it's set in a town called Gate City, and there's a new mafia boss in town of the Malone crime family, and it's this big hulking character named Snake, and he's got this, you know, skin affliction and sort of impenetrable exterior skin and a rough physique and everything. So there have been a lot of characters like this. You know, you mentioned Batman, and it reminded me of, like, the Rhino and Clayface, and Marvel has Killer Croc and Tombstone and the Thing. And so why did you choose to go with this elemental and nature quality instead of something, I don't know, like a just armored suit or something?
With Boss Snake, it was like I'd written another comic. I feel like I've been trying to write a lot of the stuff that's in Duck Unknown for a while. Like, a lot of stuff I did just like make up as I was making Duck Unknown, but there was like a few elements that I had put in other comics. But like for comics that like never went anywhere, like for every comic that you see me actually finish, there's like three or four that like I write like a pitch, and maybe an artist will draw a few pages and they don't really go anywhere, so they kind of just end up in like a folder of
stuff.
Yeah,
I'm sure lots of writers have that.
Yeah, and so I had written this comic where there was this kind of like you know, this mafia or crime boss guy who had these two sergeants, or he was kind of like a demon, I guess, like a demon boss, and he had these two lieutenants or whatever. And one of them was like a bird guy, and the other one was a snake guy. And they didn't look like that. Like, they looked like they were human. But the snake guy, I think in the comic, was going to eventually turn into a snake somehow. And, like a big snake, like a giant snake. And so I was like, you know, going over ideas for who could be like the main villain in Duck Unknown number one. And I was like, oh, I'll do that snake guy. But instead of just having him be a human with snake overtones, I just said, you know, fuck it. Let's make him, you know, like a snake man, you know. And
yeah,
so that's how that happened. He's kind of like, I kind of describe him as like Killer Croc meets the Kingpin, you know, but like a snake.
Yeah, that's that sort of, you know, there's a great you have a great embrace of like the mafia part of it, which was is really fun, and of course necessary for these sorts of pulp and vintage kind of stories, you know. And that's what, those are the kind of things that I liked about Batman, was, and the Green Hornet, was that it was always such street level crime that they were dealing with.
Yeah, by the time Doc Unknown is over, it kind of moves away from that a tad, but yeah, I mean, I definitely wanted it to be, you know, I didn't want it to be like Doc Unknown has to save the world, or Doc Unknown has to fight, you know, an invading alien army. Like, I just wanted to keep it, you know, pretty simple. And you had mentioned earlier about each issue, like, kind of having its own story.
Right.
But also over telling, like, an overall story, an overall arc. And I really wanted to do that with the book as well. I wanted someone to be able to pick up, you know, if they accidentally picked up only number two or only number three, I just don't want them to feel like, you know, like satisfied or whatever at the end of the story, even though three kind of ends on a cliffhanger, but
right. Well, right. And some of the things that you do is you do take, you take Doc Unknown from Gate City, and we see these flashbacks through, I'm thinking it was China. And then he ends up traveling a bit, and there are these great tie-ins, and it is very similar to things like the Green Hornet, who traveled, through Japan, and Batman, who went to Tibet. So where, you know, was that necessary for Doc to have, this more exotic backstory, as opposed to just, you know, a guy from, you know, Gate City?
I wanted to try and have him go through as many, like, of those kind of tropes as far as, like, his secret, you know, origin. Like, I wanted to see, like, a secret city somewhere.
Yeah, it was very cool. I really, and, you know, like I said, the artwork really took you there.
Yeah, like, you know, it was just a lot of fun. I guess I had, like, a, almost like a checklist. And it wasn't, like, an actual list. I didn't, like, make a list and go, okay, this is all the crazy stuff I want to put in this book. I had, like, a mental checklist, and I was like, well, how am I going to get there? Like, how am I going to connect the dots? And one of the things that I had wanted to write was like a Yeti. And so, and an underground.
Always good. Just like Bigfoot, you know, always good.
Yeah, and I wanted to do, like, you know, like an underground weird thing where, like, there was these, you know, subterranean creatures, and they were worshipping this weird statue, and just stuff like, I don't know, there was just all the stuff I wanted to do, and I felt like I couldn't do that, like, in his hometown. And there was this book that I read when I was, like, it was probably one of the first books I ever read, and one of the first books that I just, like, kept around when I was a kid, and I don't remember the name or anything, but it had, like, all the cool, like, weird mysteries that, you know, we all know about, like Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot and aliens, and it had, like, a section about Roswell, it had a section about Stonehenge, like, it was just, like, you know, all that really cool stuff that, you know, is like
crop circles and all the good urban legends.
yeah, just all that stuff. And man, I read that book, like, all the time, like, you know, cover to cover. And I was like, how much of that stuff can I try and fit in this book? You know, like, so yeah, I mean, I'm still, like, really into all that stuff. And like Ancient Aliens is kind of like a what do you call it? Guilty pleasure of mine. I'm not, like, believing any of it. I just,
but they're interesting. They're certainly captivating, good for storytelling, and they've lasted all of these years, you know, some things like the universal monsters and all these supernatural elements and legends. So why, you know, it's just fascinating to me, like, why do these stories end up enduring time?
Yeah. I think it's because people like to feel like that like what they're seeing isn't, like, the whole story, you know? And, like, maybe there's more to it, you know? And, like, I mean, ever since I was a kid and found out about, like, dinosaurs, like, you know, that there was, like, this whole other species that used to, you know, rule the earth, and they're not around anymore. And I was just like, that blew my mind as, like, a kid, you know? And I was just like, man, like, and we have the proof, you know, we have, like, their bones or whatever. And then just reading that book and reading about, you know, all these, like, ancient civilizations that aren't around anymore, like, the Aztec and, you know, just like, I don't know. I really like the idea that, like, what's going on right now isn't the way it always was, and there's, like, a secret history, you know? And so that's, and, like, I guess that's where the unknown part of Doc Unknown comes from. It's like, I just want to write about stuff that, you know, isn't known.
I wonder, yeah, what do you, I had read this really cool article a while ago. It was maybe 20 years ago or something. And it was saying that in the future, when archaeologists start digging up us, they're going to believe that there was a goddess cult of Barbie, and that that Barbie was a goddess who was worshipped, and it was just like this really amazing theory. And yeah. I was just like, yeah, because we do, you know, when we see things that are dug up, then they go into the museums and, you know, they determine, was this a religious artifact or was this a toy, or, you know, what did this mean? And, you know, the female figures that were different shapes and sizes. And I was just like, yeah, cult of Barbie. I'm part of the cult of Barbie. Absolutely.
Oh, that's so sad.
So I wonder if there will be a cult of Batman, perhaps. They'll be wondering, like, all of these little god statues that they uncover.
Yeah.
There'll be Batmans and Green Lanterns and.
Yeah, like in that book that I was talking about, there was like, you know, they talked about how different cultures depicted dragons. You know, there's like.
Oh, yeah, they're really different.
Yeah, and so, you know, I guess in the book they're like, so, you know, dragons must have been a real thing. Or, like, why would they draw something that wasn't real? But if people were like, well, Batman had to be, like, a real person.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to say that. Because vampires are the same way. I mean, the legends of vampires go back to these roots, and every single, culture isolated from each other, whatever, they've all got their own sort of version. And sometimes there's crossover, and then there's the Bram Stoker stuff that we have, that's what we know as vampire lore. But really, it's just amazing how these things crop up from countries that had no way to communicate with each other, and they have all these similarities.
Yeah, I think there's a shared human, you know, conscience or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I that's all that weird kind of stuff, like, how, like, a human, like, you know, like, I feel like I sound like an idiot talking about it, but whatever. Like, when people talk about, like a puzzle or something that, once someone figures it out, like, it's easier for the next person to figure it out.
Right.
Like, I kind of feel that's the way it is, or that's, like, I don't know.
But I think there's truth to that. I absolutely think there's truth to that. Like, people, you know, believe that there was no way to beat a 6-minute mile, and once one person did it, everybody realized there was something to achieve and tried doing it, you know?
Yeah, and so, yeah, it's pretty cool to think that, you know, there's a part of our brain that is connected, like, you know, invisibly or whatever.
Yeah, I think the hacker community is probably, like, a great example of that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, yeah, you put something up and you say that this is, there's unhackable software and everything is protected and your information is never going to get out. And it's like, bam, that's all I need to hear is a challenge. And they're all over the world and working on it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. In DACA Unknown, because you get these, because you do have this very, pulp theme going through the whole thing. I also love that you threw in the 1940s language, so you've got the dialogue that's like, it's curtains for you.
Yeah, you know, I just figured, you know, I'd have to try and make it, you know, try and sell it, you know, that way, you know, try and have some dialogue that shows, you know, I mean, and that's one of the reasons I even wanted to set it in that time, is because a lot of the way people would talk was just like fun, you know. And,
yeah.
But then I've had people kind of be like, well, he toned it down in the second one. I wish he hadn't done that. And I'm like, oh, okay. It's like, okay, sorry.
Yeah, you don't want it to be, you don't want it to be corny. You don't want to get to the really, really corny and, you know, overdone.
Yeah, because, I mean, when I read books, like, when I read comics from, like, that actual time period, you know, like, the early Superman stuff and the early Batman stuff, and, I mean, just in general, like, Golden Age comics or whatever, like, a lot of them are, like, hard to read because it's, like, it's almost too, you know, and, like, you can't really get, you can't blame them. I mean, that's like how
that
people were talking back then. But, like, I wouldn't want to do a book that was totally and completely, like, trying to be that, because then I think it would just be hard to read. And so, you know, I think Doc Unknown still kind of feels like a modern book, even though, you know, it isn't. Like, it takes place during World War II or whatever.
Yeah, and there's lots of guys doing this, and I love it because it's a, you know, there's sort of like a subculture in our subculture of the fandom. You know, like Athena Voltaire by Steve Bryant has the same settings, and, you know, she travels all over the world. You know, we were all very well versed in Indiana Jones, and but like the Timoney brothers had their book out on Zuda through Zuda called The Night Owls, and reminded me of that too. Where
I haven't read those books you're mentioning, but I'd like to.
Yeah, I'll have to like give you a list of cool things. And of course, Green Hornet's still being put out by Dynamite.
Yeah.
So just super super fun stuff. And I know that when you put out Doc Unknown, because you've got it's a 4-issue miniseries, so you decided to self-publish this, even though you have relationships with publishers. So I was wondering why you went that route in order to get the book done.
I did pitch it to, like, you know, some publishers that you would probably expect me to pitch it to, or, like, expect someone to pitch stuff to, like, you know, like Image and stuff. And, I mean, honestly, like, I didn't really get too much interest in it. I can say that now and laugh.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, because it's their loss, in my personal opinion.
And, like, I mean, I guess every creator, when they, you know, put out, when they think of a new comic and actually start working on a new comic, you know, I'm pretty sure most of them are like, this is the coolest thing I've ever done, you know, and, like, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this is a home run. And so, like, to have, you know, to be getting these, like, rejection emails, like, was really, like, disheartening at the time. It was, like, earlier this year, around, like, maybe, like, January or February, when the first issue was done. And, you know, I sent it out to some publishers and, you know, was getting either not getting any feedback as far as, like, why they were, you know, just getting, like, a form rejection letter, or just having people say stuff like, oh, well, it's too much like a superhero book, and, you know, and then I had someone, you know, say that it was too much like Hellboy, and I'm like, well, I had one publisher tell me it was too much like a superhero book, and another publisher tell me it was too much like Hellboy, and it was just like, to me, those are conflicting.
Very conflicting, yeah, not even, no.
So then after that, I kind of started taking what anybody would say as far as, like, a rejection, like, with a grain of salt, because I'm like, it's something different to everybody, you know, and so, yeah, and, like, pretty much I just decided, you know, I mean, it's sad to say, but, like, if your book isn't coming out with, like, Image or Dark Horse or Archaea or IDW, like, it's almost invisible. Like, I mean, like, there's a lot of people that search for comics through smaller publishers, and, you know, with the internet now, with Facebook and Twitter, it's a lot easier to find out about books being put out by smaller publishers. But, like, I just kind of started looking at the numbers about what I had, how many, you know, books I had sold on my own, and how many books I had sold with, like, you know, publishers and stuff, and it just didn't really seem like that much of a difference. And so I just figured, you know, I'm already doing this book just, like, out of the pure, like, passion of it, you know, like, that I just want to do this one last, like, really fun book, and I just figured it'd be best just to go ahead and do it myself and have, you know, complete control over when it comes out, how many issues get printed, and just, I don't know, I just wanted to have total control, I guess.
Okay.
That's published.
All right. Because I know that, Comixology has a submit thing now.
Yeah.
I don't know how sales are with that, because honestly, it's, when you call something submit, to me, it's very odd when I, like, go to their app or their website or whatever. If I see a button that says submit, I don't think that that's a place I'm going to shop. I think that that's a place I'm going to send something.
Right.
So it's, but what it's, the intention of it and what it's for is, for people who are not tied to big publishers.
Yeah.
You can submit your independent comic, and if it gets approved, it will then be made available in their special section of Indie Comics. But like I said, it's just very awkward that you're clicking submit to go shopping for these, you know, for these indie books.
Yeah, no, Comixology Submit was really like it really solidified, like, okay, cool, I can do this on my own. Like, I can promote it on my own. And now with Comixology Submit, it's like people that I wouldn't reach will be able to read the comic. And, you know, I've seen the first, like, report, because I think the first issue went up, like in May, so it hadn't been that long. And so the first report, I just got, like, the first report, you know, maybe a few weeks ago or something, and saw, like, how many people were downloading it, and I was, like, really surprised. It seems like it's doing really well on there. And, you know, like, from, like, other countries that I know, I don't know anybody in those countries. And so it's really cool because I'm actually selling more on Comixology Submit than I am of, like, actual print copies. So it's like a good weapon to have in the arsenal, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you need that because, just for the accessibility of it, there's the discovery of it. And also, you know, one of the things that I've noticed is people are mentioning Doc Unknown to you on Twitter. So these are, you know, people that are going to be more likely to be in tune with something available digitally.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And there's people, I mean, even after they they find out about Doc Unknown and they start, you know, following me on Twitter and we start having, like, interactions. And so in my head, I'm like, okay, cool, this person's probably going to buy the next print copy when I do another copy or do another issue. But then there's still, like, some people do, but there are a lot of people that are just, like, you know, they're strictly going to read it on Comixology, like, no matter what. And I'm fine with that. I mean,
yeah, I like trades, so I'm, like, really over the independent individual floppy issues.
Yeah, I'm starting to kind of move away towards that. I think if we are lucky enough to do a second volume of Doc Unknown, I'd really like to just do it straight to trade.
And I know that this character that's in issue one, Boss Snake, that we talked about with the sneaky features, in one of your, you've got like a, not a letters, I guess you'd call it like a letters page. At the end, it said something that you were working on a project about Boss Snake. So what can you tell us about that?
Pretty much since like the beginning of, you know, since I, you know, did the first issue, I had a lot of fun writing Boss Snake, and there's a page in there where Doc Unknown kind of breaks down like his life story to him in like six panels. He's like, you know, you were abandoned at an orphanage at 3 days old, you ran away at 13 to a life of crime. He just kind of goes through his life and and then Boss Snake, you know, responds with telling him to shut up, like, angrily. Like, I think it was offending to him that Doc Unknown could just, like, be, like, tell him his whole life story in, like, you know, a few sentences. And so I wanted, and, like, the page itself, you know, Ryan, man, and it was so awesome when he did that page because he did, like a ink wash style.
Yeah, it was a beautiful, like, flashback dream sequence kind of thing.
Yeah, and like, he tinted it green, because, you know, Snake is green, and so, like, ever since I saw that page, I just knew that I wanted to try and tell more of that story. Like, I wanted to tell what happened between the panels, and, you know, how he got from, you know, panel one to panel two, and I don't know, I couldn't let it go. And, like, originally I was like, it'd be cool to do, because I have been writing, like, short Doc Unknown stories that are just, like, you know, outside of the continuity of this normal, of the first miniseries, just stuff that happened before or after the events of this first miniseries. And I had also, like, outlined, like, a five-page Boss Snake story and kind of was like, yeah, one of these days I'm going to tell, like, a story which is Boss Snake. And do you hear my dog?
Yeah, I heard him back there. I have to keep muting my microphone because of traffic.
But yeah, anyway, it sounded funny. But yeah, I just wanted to tell like a Boss Snake story, and the more I thought about it, the more details started to like emerge, and before I knew it, I was like, man, this is probably gonna have to be like a one-shot. And so yeah, as it is right now, the Boss Snake story that I've written is at 40 pages, and I decided that'd be a good way to test the Kickstarter waters, because, you know, since I've been doing comics, I've had a lot of people just say, like, well, if you don't like you know, spending all this money. It's not, I don't like spending the money. It's just like, you know, it's a lot of money. They're like, well, we should try and do a Kickstarter. And I've just been really reluctant because I've never really felt I had much of like an audience or like, I was just like, I don't know. I think I'm still kind of like an unknown at this point. Like I'm still small potatoes.
But that's, you know, that was the intention of Kickstarter. Now that famous celebrities are using it, you know, whatever. I'm like one of those people that does have issue with it because I'm like, you already have money.
And I can see, I mean, I did kind of feel like that way too. I was like, I thought it was supposed to be like for dudes like me or people that are, you know, like unheard of and can kind of help out. Like they have no other way of doing it. But yeah, so I figured, you know, like I said, I had kind of got to the point where I was like burnt out on spending the amount of money I've been spending making comics. And, but I'm not burnt out on writing new comics. I'm not burnt out on.
Good. That's a good motivation there.
Yeah. So I was like, you know, going forward, I guess if I want to keep doing this, which I do, but I don't want to spend the money, you know, obviously I don't want to spend this amount of money anymore. I just figured, you know, Kickstarter would be the way for me that would be the answer. You know, like it'd be really great to keep making new comics and just have a Kickstarter there as like a way for people to, for me to get the money, obviously, but like more so for me to reach an audience that as of right now, I haven't reached is a Kickstarter audience, you know? So I think I have high hopes. I'm kind of nervous still because I still feel like I'm not like this, you know, recognizable person or whatever, but like, with Doc Unknown, I feel like I've expanded my fan base. And so I think, you know, now with us showing that we can put out a comic every other month, I think the momentum is like really high right now. And so, that's why we're going to launch it, I think, you know, late next week or whatever. Cause I want to see if it'll actually work. So we're trying to ask for like 2,500 cause it's just like a one shot.
Right.
And, you know, if it is successful and how successful it is, like if we go over or whatever, then I'd like to do a second volume of Doc Unknown sometime next year through Kickstarter.
I'd say that's a really modest amount.
Yeah.
So that's great. I don't think you would have any problem reaching that. And, you know, if it's enough to pay Ryan and to get you to conventions to promote it, that's great.
Yeah. And like, and you know, I did want to set it kind of low or like relatively low. Like you see a lot of people go on Kickstarter asking for like anywhere between $10,000 and $20,000. And I mean, like, I really don't think I can get that amount right now, but I think if this one works out, and then I'm, like, on people's radar.
Right.
And like, we actually, because Ryan will draw the Boss Snake one-shot, like, in a month, you know? Like, I'm gonna be telling people, like, you know, that they're going to get this book really soon. It's not going to be, like, one of those Kickstarters, because I've backed Kickstarters that I'm still waiting on, you know? Like, from, like, a year ago or whatever. And, like, sometimes there's circumstances where you're, like, especially anthologies, you know, they got a lot of horses to rein in.
So, I noticed that, yeah, it does take a long time for some of them.
Yeah, but like this one won't take long, and so I think once we show people that, you know, we can deliver, and I think that'll give me the confidence to ask for more money next time, you know, something closer to 10 for like another Doc Unknown miniseries. And there's some stuff that's going to be happening with Doc Unknown pretty soon that I can't announce yet, but I think we'll, you know, get more eyes on the project and help us out if we want to do a second volume next year.
That's good. I look forward to it because I was absolutely enamored by the four issues that I read.
Awesome.
Yeah, so you'll have a very loudmouth fan over here. in your storytelling, I noticed that like most of the pages are nice, really big panels, like only 4 to 5 panels on a page. Is that something that you specifically aim for, or is it just unconsciously how it works out for you?
I think when I started writing comics, I had read that the average non-splash page consisted of like 5 to 6 panels, and so when I did like Extinct, I did try to stick to that, and because that was like the first comic that I did, and then but like since then, I feel like I've kind of gotten to a point where I want to let the art tell most of the story. Like, as like a comic book fan, I'm like way more into, like an artist who also does their own writing. Like, you know, like the earlier, or like Hellboy, you know, like Mike Mignola, when it's all just Mike Mignola. I mean, like, he does BPRD and stuff, and that's different artists, and John Arcudi's helping him, or John Arcudi's writing it or whatever, but, like, whenever it's just, like, Mike Mignola, like, you know, and, like, The Goon as well, there's, like, a lot of pages that are just, like, 2 panels, 3 panels, where you get to see more, I feel like you get to see more art, you know?
Yeah, you can be immersed into the scene.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, like I said, I am, like, really stoked on Ryan's art, and so I just wanted to, you know, so I guess, yeah, it was, like, a conscious thing. I'm like, okay, this page is going to be, you know, just 4 panels, 3 panels. there's going to be some splash pages, you know. A lot of people, I think, try and not do as many splash pages, I do a good job of, like, how and when to do splash pages, you know? But yeah, I definitely wanted to just wanted to, you know, like you said, get immersed in the art or whatever.
Now, what's the revision process like for you when you're all done and you think that your script is pretty finalized? Does the artist, in this case Ryan Cody, does he see it at any point before then to give you suggestions, or does he make suggestions once you think you're pretty solid with how it is, and then you know consider reworking anything?
Up until very recently, I haven't really had any kind of revision process. I usually just, I'll write the script and I'm like, okay, that's it, you know, and I send it to an artist and, you know, that's it, you know.
Okay.
Pretty much. But I guess I've gotten not really, like, paranoid, but, like, I've seen so many of my like, writer friends talk about, like, you know, editing and revision and just trying to, like, make the story tighter, and so I've actually asked I don't know if you know Ryan Lindsay.
Yeah, Ryan's been on the show. We talked a lot about ponies, My Little Ponies.
Yeah, I actually have him editing the Boss Snake one shot right now, and so and he's been, like, invaluable. Like, I really like working with him, and so, and actually owe him an email. But yeah, so yeah, I think in going forward, I am going to try and tighten up, you know, not just let my first pass be what ends up getting drawn up. As far as, like, Ryan's input, you know, there are a lot of times where he'll send a page and he'll say, you know, I went ahead and switched up panels 3 and 4, or I combined panels 3 and 4, or, you know, he's like, I chose a different, you know, kind of angle on this one, or he'll mess with, like, a panel size. Because, like, in my scripts, I'll be like, oh, this is a wide panel, this is a small panel, you know. And so sometimes, you know, he'll change that up, like. And I totally trust him, you know, he's the artist, and he has, like, that more, like, visual style thinking, you know, so, you know, he knows what's going to look best on the page and stuff, so, yeah, there is some revision on Ryan's part.
Yeah, that's cool. I think it's important to, you know, obviously have faith and trust in your artist, because they, you know, if you get somebody that's really solid, you picked him for a reason, you know, you modeled the whole script specifically for him, so obviously there's a lot of faith and trust there.
Yeah. Bro, all the way. I mean, just, yeah, I've been really happy working with him. That's why I don't, like, want Doc Unknown to be over.
Yeah.
That's why I, like, one day I just woke up and I was like, man, I, like, won't be happy if I don't do this Boss Snake story. Like, fuck it, let's try and do a Kickstarter for a Boss Snake one shot, because, like, I just didn't want it to be over. Like, I was, like, and I was telling people, like, you know, when he was drawing number 4 and he was getting towards the end of number 4, I was like, man, there's, like, a time that's quickly approaching where I won't be getting new art pages from Ryan in my email, in my inbox, and that's, like, that bums me out. Like, it depresses me.
Aww.
So I was just like, we gotta keep it going. And so, like I said, I came up with the idea to do a Boss Snake one shot to try and, you know, test the waters and see if maybe we'll get, because ideally I'd like to do 12 issues of Doc Unknown and just have it 3 books, and you know, volume 1, 2, and 3, and then, you know, like I said, I always plan out, like, when I'm just like, I mean, I'm a writer, I have, like, a imagination. I spend a lot of my time just imagining things.
Yeah.
I just imagine, like, a day where I can put, like, 12 issues of Doc Unknown in, like, this big hardcover book and just put it on my desk and just be like, yeah, cool.
Yeah, there you go. Like, I made that. That's my masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, as part of your dreams, do you dream about seeing it in any other media format? Like, do you dream of seeing an animated Doc Unknown or something?
Oh, wow. Not really. I mean, I hadn't thought of it, but, like, as soon as you said it, it sounded cool.
That sounds cool.
I have seen, like, because there's been a lot of artists that have, you know, I asked a lot of artist friends, like, man, it'd be really cool if you just did a Doc Unknown pinup, especially towards the beginning, because I just wanted to create as much awareness of Doc Unknown, like, and I figured if I just came out with, like, this, like, army of artists. I mean, I've had like 22 different art. I could fill up like a whole one shot with just people that did Doc Unknown pinups. And I just wanted it to, like, because I figured their fans and friends would see it and be like, what is this? What is this character? I just wanted it to seem like Doc Unknown was like this thing as soon as it came out, you know, like this thing that was already existed. And so a couple of those guys, you know, they do have a more like animated style. And I was like, oh, this would be cool if it was like a Doc Unknown animated series. But, yeah, I don't see it happening. I don't know. Like, I do kind of, like, have, you know, like, these dreams. Like, oh, it'd be cool if, you know, like I just mentioned, it'd be cool if I could do, like a 12-issue run of Doc Unknown and have it, like, be this big hardcover thing. But, as far as, like, a cartoon, I mean, I don't think that could happen.
I know. Never say never, though. Wouldn't it be great? We'll just,
yeah, yeah, it'd be insane. Especially because, you know, Batman the Animated Series was such a influence.
It was so good, yeah. And, but I mean, you know, even like Batman Beyond and like Kim Possible, you know, these like crazy villains and out on adventures and
yeah,
and,
like, yeah.
But like it's, you know, one of the voice actors from there. He was Ron Stoppable, and he was also, I'm pretty sure he was the voice of Terry in Batman Beyond, Will Friedle. Like, he'd be a perfect Doc Unknown.
Yeah, I mean, that would be, I was just thinking the other day, if someone ever cosplayed as Doc Unknown, I would probably, like, shit my pants.
Isn't it great? I mean, and that, it could happen. It could happen. I just, you know.
Yeah, I feel like someone cosplaying as Doc Unknown is a lot more likely than, you know, an animated series. But, I mean, I would love if there was an animated series. That'd be insane. Especially because, you know, I have a son. He's almost 2. He'll be 2 next week. And so, like, you know, maybe in a few years, if there was a Doc Unknown animated series and he could watch it and I could be like, you know, I wrote that or I created that guy, you know, like it'd be really cool to show him that.
Yeah, I, you know, it's one of those things that happens, or sometimes you just end up, if it's not your, you know, if it's not your character or something like that, maybe you get the chance to work on something else.
Oh, yeah.
Like totally. That and give you that same feeling.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, I would like to do that. I just don't see it happening. I'm like, but yeah, I mean, I think Doc Unknown does lend itself to, you know, that kind of like, you know, like a cartoon and like toys. And so I could see Doc Unknown toys, but like, as far as like a movie, I don't think it would get turned into a movie at all because.
We'd have to kickstart this. Let's talk bigger Kickstarters now.
I mean, maybe if I found an animation company to do like a 30-minute episode, that'd be cool. Maybe that's something to think about for like, you know, the future or whatever.
Yeah, it could happen. Hey, The Living Corpse had you know, animation movie done, which was, you know, it's one of those things where they're like, it was just somebody that they met, somebody who, you know, liked the property enough that he's like, hey, I think I want to do this. Would you guys, you know, be okay with this? And boom. You know? Yeah. I mean, it's like, it was a long process. They were waiting on it for a really long time, but now they have a DVD to show for it.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be amazing. I mean, we're still in, you know, Doc Unknown year one, you know? So, I mean, I guess no telling.
Yeah, it's early.
Yeah.
So when you're writing, do you have a very specific method? Like, do you have something playing in the background? Or is it like you can only write during a certain time of day because you got family to, you know, deal with and balance and all of this stuff? Like, is there a very specific process?
Yeah, I have to... I have to dress up like Doc Unknown.
I like this. I have to channel the character.
No, yeah, I usually do most of my writing after I get off work. I work at night. And so by the time I get home, it's like 11. And so I'll write for like, you know, a couple hours before I go to sleep. And by that time, everybody's asleep and it's like, you know, the middle of the night. So it's like quiet. I can't write with music like some people do. Like, I tried it early on, like, when I first started writing, I was like, oh, I'm gonna turn on some music. But then what ended up happening was, I started, like, air drumming. And
everything but writing.
Yeah, I just started, like, air drumming and, like, getting into the music, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, I haven't written a sentence in, like, you know, a minute. So, I figured out that I had to just have complete silence. And when I started writing Doc Unknown, I was like, you know, maybe the problem, because I heard a lot of my writer friends and even artists talking about how they would work on comics to, like, soundtracks.
Right.
Like movie scores.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, well, let me try that. And so I'm part of this group called the Small Press Commandos, and you know, they are responsible for FUBAR. I'm pretty sure you've heard of.
Yeah.
FUBAR, yeah. And so I went on there and I was like, hey, what kind of, like, soundtracks do you guys listen to make comics? I'm looking for, like, a pulp type thing, because I'm working on this Golden Age type pulp book or whatever. And so they gave me some ideas and stuff, and yeah, there were some really cool, like, you know, old school sounding like music that was, like, real fitting for Doc Unknown. But again, it was just distracting. Like, I don't like, my attention span is is pretty bad. Like, I can only do, like, one thing at a time.
yeah, I know that feeling. I would put on music like that for inspiration, and the same thing. I did find it eventually distracting, but, like, I sort of needed it as, like, a transition to get into a mood, and then I could turn it down really low or something, or I'll, you know, if I have the TV on, I'm, like, completely not paying attention to it.
Yeah.
because otherwise I would just sit there and watch TV. but yeah, it's one of those things where I'm not a night person, and I know so many writers that write at night, and I have no idea how they do it. I'm like, dude, my brain has turned off by then. I am useless.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess it was just out of necessity. Like, I had to do it at night because that's really the only time I could. Like, in the morning, I'm taking care of my son. And even though recently I did write, like, Doc Unknown number 4 was, like 4 pages longer than the rest of the series, or, like, the rest of the issues.
Right.
And 2 of those pages I added on while Ryan was about to finish the book. And I think that was also a subconscious way of me not wanting for it to be over. I have these 2 pages I need to write, you know, but, I had to get them to him, like, as soon as possible, because he was already working on them, and so, working on the pages, and so, I just wrote them real quick with my son here hanging out in my office, and, you know, he was playing with all, like, my little toys and stuff. I have, like, little Star Wars and Batman toys laying around and stuff, and so, you know, he was busy with that. And I was actually able to go ahead and write those 2 pages with him here. I never actually tried to do, because, you know, toddlers are so crazy. They're, like, getting into everything. But
he's just going
to
start sticking everything into his mouth that he can.
Well, he's past that stage. But, yeah, like, I was, like, I've always been worried that I couldn't write when he was around. And so that's one of the reasons I would write at night when everybody's asleep. But I actually accomplished it that day. So I was like, oh, it's not so bad. And then my wife is, like, so great. Like, she's very, you know, understanding of the comic book thing, and so there are a lot of times over the weekend where she's like, you know, go write, you know, go do whatever you gotta do, and, you know, she'll handle my son and everything, so it works out pretty good.
That's great. It's good to have a good support system.
Oh yeah, she's the best. And then even, you know, just like yesterday I had, or like this past week, I thought of a new comic idea, and I've kind of just been, like, you know, forming all the ideas in my head and writing some little notes and stuff, but I hadn't really talked to anybody about it. And so I was able to, you know, we went to lunch yesterday, and I kind of just, like, told her everything that I thought of so far. And I think being able to talk about talk about the ideas I have to someone else, and it helps, like, whenever I'm, like, because sometimes I'll say something, and as soon as I say it out loud, I'm like, wait, that's dumb.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really good to have her there, and, you know, for her to offer feedback, and I can kind of tell what's working and what's not working from, like, her face.
Yeah, but it's funny. There's a couple friends of mine that I know through the comics workshop, that Comics Experience, and, you know, if I throw something ridiculous out there on Twitter, and, you know, somebody will reply to and be like, and then what? And then, and why would he do that? And what would, and it, suddenly it's like, oh, okay. And it's something is being fleshed out right there.
Yeah.
Before your eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a, yeah, I think that's another reason why I wanted to bring Ryan on, Ryan Lindsay on as a editor for the Boss Snake one shot, because I figured it could only, it would not hurt, you know, I figured it could only enhance whatever, I was writing, you know. I see him talking about, and that's why I tapped him, is because I see him talking a lot about, you know, breaking a story and, you know, trying to, you know, really sharpen, you know, the story, like, while you're working on it. And you know, up until this, up until recently, I just hadn't really given that much thought to that whole thing. And, like, I know a lot of guys are probably would listen to that and be like, wow, he's not, he's going with his first draft. But yeah, and so, you know, that's why I brought Ryan on, because I figured he could help out with, like, you know, like, point out stuff I hadn't thought of, or maybe let me know when something isn't as strong as maybe I thought. And so, and yeah, and he's totally performing that function, you know, to the T. So.
That's good. He's a great guy.
Yeah, he's great.
So where will people be able to find you and find information so that they can keep up with the new Kickstarter that'll be launching and any of the new announcements about where you're going to be and all that stuff? What's your website?
Well, I have, like, a Tumblr, you know, Fabian Rangel Jr. .tumblr.com.
Right.
And then I also have, you know, I'm on Facebook and Twitter and stuff. But, like, Facebook and Twitter, like, that's where, I mean,
because
I don't really, yeah, I don't really update my blog all that often. But yeah, if you're on Facebook or Twitter, like, it's best, that'd be the best way, because that's pretty much all I talk about.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people I went to high school with that either have deleted me or blocked me because they're just tired of hearing about comic books. They're like, man, it's like all he talks about. I mean, I'll post pictures of my son every now and then too, because he's really cute. So.
Oh. I think he should be dressed up as Doc Unknown for Halloween. There you go.
Yeah, maybe.
So, all right, Fabian, thanks so much for all your time and, you know, fitting me into the, we had to juggle the time zones and everything. So thank you for having it work out.
Oh, thank you. It's really fun.
And you guys, of course, you can find me at Elizabeth Amber on Twitter and amberunmasked.com and Amber Unmasked on Facebook. And don't forget that October 5th and 6th is our big two-day superhero weekend at Comic Fusion in Flemington, New Jersey. This is where we have our charity art auction and lots of fun things to do in the store. We're going to have a lot of cosplayers. We're going to have guests in the store like Jabal Eigel and Dwayne Swierczynski. We're going to have musician Sarah Donner joining us. So October 5th and 6th, and yes, you will be able to bid on things online. All you have to do is email the store with your highest bid. So you will, if you're following me, you will get plenty of updates about Superhero Weekend, and all of the proceeds will benefit Safe and Hunterdon. So don't forget, follow me on Twitter at Elizabeth Amber. Thanks again, Fabian.
Thank you. You're welcome.